Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks for staying with us here on Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, more than half a year has passed since COVID-19 hit. And globally, governments have introduced measures to help buffer the blow of this pandemic. But just as we move forward, a fresh wave pops up. Over in Australia, its second most populous state, Victoria, said that military personnel will be deployed to enforce COVID-19 isolation orders with anyone caught in breach of those rules facing tough new fines. And in the Philippines, over the weekend, President Rodrigo Duterte restored stricter quarantine restrictions around metropolitan Manila after the Philippines tallied 4 straight days of record increases in COVID-19 infections, and healthcare workers warned of a collapse of the healthcare system. Now, we've been seeing similar stories to this across the region. But to find out what all of this means when it comes to an economic recovery for the region, we're joined on the line today by Pushan Dutt, Professor of Economics and Political Sciences at INSEAD. Pushan, thank you so much for joining us again today.
Happy to be here.
Good to have you back. Have you been keeping well and safe and healthy?
Yes, more or less. A bit bored, but otherwise okay.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, we hope to liven you up with this conversation then, Pushan. Now, tell us first, this is a very somber topic, but what does this fresh wave and fresh waves of lockdown as well mean for the regional economy and the growth trajectory?
So, yeah, we are seeing some outbreaks in these select places, some of which you mentioned, but it's nothing approaching a very big second wave. In fact, we should keep in mind that all these countries in East Asia and Pacific have done a phenomenal job in terms of bending the disease curve and cautiously exiting from lockdown. They've kept fatality rates very low. That going ahead for the region are essentially, will we see a second wave during the fall? And what is going to happen to movement of people and goods and services between countries because they're integrated part of global supply chains? So what is most likely is that we are going to see divergence across sectors and countries. Countries that are heavily reliant on services and movement of people will have a very slow recovery. Within a country, some sectors such as transport, leisure, tourism, they're likely to remain depressed for a long time till vaccine and therapeutics return us to life. So the key question also to ask is, what is the magnitude and length of the fiscal relief? So Singapore and Japan have spent about 20% of the GDP in terms of fiscal relief. The question becomes, how long is this sustainable?
So how long is it sustainable, Pushan, from your perspective? I mean, once the fiscal relief has lifted and, you know, people are left to carry on, what next?
It becomes country-specific. Some countries, including Singapore, which have very good credit rating, they can literally borrow today at zero interest rates. So if we believe that, you know, a vaccine will be discovered, then it's extremely important that you borrow, run deficits, not worry so much about the debt part of the debt to GDP ratio, worry more about the GDP part, and essentially try to tide it over by doing all these unconventional monetary and fiscal stimulus measures. That's far more important in terms of, you know, tiding this, even if it takes more than a year to do so. Other countries do not have the space, unfortunately, like India, for instance.
Now, Pushan, you mentioned a vaccine and, you know, 6 months in. From your perspective, is the only solution a vaccine, or do we now need to start accepting or thinking about the new normal?
So I actually find this massive faith in vaccines, like waiting for vaccines, a bit of wishful thinking. So while it is true we've gone from the disease to large-scale trials of at least 6 vaccines in remarkable speed, we should keep expectations realistic. Will the vaccine work? We have not found a vaccine for either HIV or measles. How long will it provide immunity? Is it like the flu vaccine or is it like the measles vaccine? How many people should get vaccinated for herd immunity? How will the world survive this jockeying to get the vaccine? But keep in mind that most of the wins so far has been in terms of therapies, you know, that treating patients early sort of helps, that the immune reaction in the bodies is equally dangerous, figuring out, you know, how to effectively socially distance, ramping up tests. We seem to discount these advances while pinning our hopes and dreams on some elusive vaccine. We are sort of setting ourselves up for disappointment.
So what are you looking out for in the coming months then?
So in the coming months, hopefully, you know, the coronavirus will not mutate, that, you know, we will not have such a big flu epidemic. and that we will actually make progress towards the vaccine. If we want to go back to the world of old, and we may never get there, mm-hmm. we have to essentially have a vaccine. But the challenge that we will face in 2021 is how to efficiently and effectively deliver it to a large number of people, right? Just manufacturing and delivering it to the world, especially the populations who are uniquely vulnerable, is actually a gigantic task. Just to give you an example, India is one of the few countries that can produce the vaccine at massive scale, but it lacks the inputs like reagents and test tubes which come from China. The IP and the vaccines themselves will probably come from US, UK, and China. So you're going to need intellectual protection, you need technology from Europe and US, production from India, parts from China. So the global cooperation is absolutely essential next year. And that will be determined by lots of political outcomes that happen in the interim.
And you say that for next year, and I want to ask you, 2020 has been the year of pandemic. What will 2021 be from your perspective?
So hopefully the world will learn that this is sort of an existential threat, and we will learn to cooperate. I see more reasons of pessimism than optimism. Again, to give you a concrete example, the U.S. just bought up the world's entire supply of remdesivir. Mm-hmm. We don't seem to be cooperating. We seem to be casting blame about the virus. If we succeed, countries are using it as a means for nationalism and populism to become patriotic. So it doesn't look so good in the future for 2021. But hopefully, if there is a new president in the U.S. and sort of sanity takes hold again, and the U.S. takes a leading role in this health crisis, then things can get better.
We're speaking with Bhushan Dutt, Professor of Economics and Political Sciences at INSEAD. And just leading on from that, Bhushan, we're seeing a shift in global economic forces, and relations between China and the US have been tense. Now, some political pundits have said that the latest provocation is an electoral move to get Trump another 4 years in office. Do you think that's the case?
I don't think that's the case. So it is true that Trump is looking for a villain to help him in his re-election, but it is not clear that this is China. So there are various reasons for this. So first, Trump is enamored with strong authoritarian leaders, which makes him more likely to pick a fight with Canada than with China. Second, he has various business interests in China. Third, he actually tried a trade war with China, and he figured out that it hurt his base more than it helped. So also we should keep in mind that according to news reports, President Trump asked China to help him win the election. So I think it is more his hawkish advisors who are driving this. So they are afraid that Trump will lose. So his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and his trade advisor, Peter Navarro, they've intensified their attack on China in recent weeks because they think there's a small window of opportunity. My take is that what they're trying to do is they're trying to engineer these irreversible changes that will tie the hands of future administrations, especially a Biden administration.
And we have seen some tit-for-tat moves between the U.S. and China, though. What are you watching out for now in this evolving power struggle?
So in the short term, this fight over TikTok, which is happening, mm-hmm. Who's going to own TikTok? And it's a comedy of errors right now. President Trump said yesterday in the U.S., said that he actually wants the U.S. government to have a stake in TikTok. I have no idea what that means. I think nobody has any idea what that means. So I think the big question is whether the Chinese will allow ByteDance, the company, to spin it off or to sell it to Microsoft. The Chinese will rightfully complain that this is actually bullying behavior on part of the U.S. and they're forcing an IP transfer. Of course, this is ironical because China itself has engaged in these questionable technology transfers in the past. The thing that I'm keeping a much closer eye on is corporate America and whether corporate America changes its thinking. Essentially, corporate America, and through their lobbyists, they have a huge influence and a huge stake in China. They do not want to lose market access or access to cheap manufacturing. As long as they remain invested in China, I don't think much will change on the ground because the lobbyists will make sure that, China doesn't get isolated. However, if there's a shift in thinking amongst the corporate leaders that, countries like India and Vietnam are feasible alternatives, and they get really pessimistic about Chinese moves on tech transfer, then we can expect to see many more changes.
Well, Bhushan, as always, it's wonderful to have you with us. But unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Pushan Dutt, Professor of Economics and Political Science at INSEAD. You're listening to Money FM 89.3, Singapore's most influential radio station.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.